Good afternoon, everybody. It's 2:12 p.m. We're a little late starting the weekly show this afternoon. Had a few technical difficulties. If you've been in the chat room, we've been trying to keep you up to date, but we had a bad firewire cable. Anyway, I'm Dan Mellinger. With me today is Drazen Pantic, co-hosting. Sean, would you mind turning the monitor down? It's totally distracting me. Anyway, here we are. Once again, we're at DBA in the Garden, First Avenue, between 2nd and 3rd, here in the East Village, New York City, for the fourth Unmediated Weekly Show. And for the fourth week in a row, it's also just a beautiful sunny day. So the media gods are smiling upon us.
Yeah, it's a little bit cold, but it's nice. Yeah.
So today, what we figured we'd do is, since this is the show that is associated with the unmediated.org website, we're going to talk a bit about some of the stories that have been on the website in the past week. And please jump in, as always, with any questions. This is the interactive telejournalist platform that we're running this show on. So, as always, your input and your interaction is appreciated. Please ask us questions, and let's make this conversation.
And we've had a lot of people on the listening to the podcast of the show as well, so let's do a special show.
Oh, yeah, let's welcome everybody listening on the podcast of the show. It sounds like we've got an enclosure up, and it's being listed on some RSS feeds, so we'd like to just welcome everybody who's listening or watching the Unmediated Weekly Show in a manner. But yeah, we are, if you're not watching live, that's okay. You can't interact unless you're watching with your friends, but hopefully you still enjoy the video.
Actually, that might be a good idea for people watching that, you know, the clip. They might log in into the chat room and post some comments, or chat could be alive even if the stream is not.
That's true. Yeah, the chat room is always running.
Yeah,
the chat room is always running. Yeah.
You can plan to watch it with other people, or once we get a big enough critical mass watching this show, if we be a little wishful there, but then maybe there will always be an active chat going on. So welcome.
Yeah.
Do you want to?
Welcome. So it's not as if this is a debate, but we're going to also mention a couple of things from the debates. Internets. We are on one right now.
One of the internets?
One of the internets. The good one. If you don't like, you can always go to the next one.
Drazen's talking about a line from Bush's speech. I've actually got it up in video. Maybe I should put the torrent up. But just hilarious.
And you have all the videos.
I have. Yeah, I've been recording all the debates with my PVR that's running great. Sage TV off C-SPAN. I think the first one might have gotten a little messed up, but I've got it off CNN through BitTorrent. So I've got them all, and we're gonna, you know, be able to basically talk about them. We're doing you want to actually talk a little bit about what's going on at PS1?
Yes.
Election night? Or?
Yeah. No, that's a good idea. We could actually start with that. So in the gallery where I work, location one, numeral1.org, 26 Green Street, we plan to do election night with New York video bloggers and text bloggers, of course. But the idea is to have a couple of people mixing videos, video feeds from television channels, covering election. A couple unmediated guys there do one of those sessions like this. We have to come up with various ideas how to make it as alive as possible and as interesting as possible. And what might be the added value, something that would not be available on television. And also how to make those comments from the chat room integral part of the event. The whole thing, the stream, together with two streams from regular television channels and, let's say, video mix of those things will be projected into the gallery and onto the one of the streams we're going to be projected onto the gallery window, so the people from the street will be able to see that.
Oh, great.
Of course, everything will be streamed live. And that's it. But basically, we are now in a planning stage. We know that the event is going to be, so it's November 2nd, 7 o'clock onwards, and 26 Green Street, so everybody is welcome.
And you could really participate either being physically there or through the web.
Through the web, obviously through the chat room. On Location One, we have a similar system to this one, chat room together with the live stream. We'll have this one also. We'll have a couple of streams going on. I don't know. The idea would be also to enable people to log in onto DV Guide and post some short clips, video clips, and see that either through torrent or through some other system, direct upload. So it's going to be media and video delirium, hopefully. Actually, we are going to be there, a couple of other people.
When is it again?
It's November 2nd, election night, 7 plus.
Until it's over?
Until it's over.
Which, based on last year, could be a couple of weeks. Based on last time, 4 years ago, could be a couple of weeks.
Now that we might be camping out. Now that we are going to spend the night, we're going to see fairly soon what's going to happen. If it's going to last forever, we might come back next day.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
So people should go to location1.org on that night?
Yes. Yeah. Or come by the gallery. It's the address is 26 Green Street. It's Green Street between Canal and Grand, location one. There's no way to miss. It's a storefront window, location one, and so on and so on. A show that is running there in one of the spaces of location one is Skin and Control by Chris Csikszentmihalyi from MIT. It's a two piece, basically. Two pieces installation. One is plane, 747 plane, and the other one is control panel from the plane. So people will be able to play with that also.
And what's your role at location?
I'm co-director there. I'm in charge of internet and let's say new media and media things there.
Okay. So I'd like to just dig into the unmediated archives right now and take a look at some stories that have come up in the last week. One thing that I always find interesting is what are the major studios, record labels, the RIAA, doing to try to fight the pirates? No, thank you. What are they doing? And so there's a story that was posted, looks like on the 7th of October, flooding of P2P networks. If you're a regular user of Kazaa and you like pop music, and increasingly even other types of music, you probably have found that a lot of times when you download a song, you get not what you intended to get, but either the wrong song or a song that's messed up intentionally, a little hiccupy. And what is that? That's companies, usually hired by the record companies themselves, just flooding the P2P nets with crap to basically piss off people enough that they hope they'll stop using those P2P networks. And I always kind of find it kind of interesting. Of course it's annoying. I have maybe downloaded illegal content in the past just to try it out. And I'm wondering what people think of that, because my personal view on it is let them do it. I think it's great.
It's great.
I think if anything, in the long run, this is going to make the network stronger, going to make it make the users, put the users in a position where they have to collect better metadata about their media, figure out which are good files and which are bad. Certainly it pisses people off and it makes things a little tougher, but it is a battle, any way you put it.
It's really interesting. And one of my favorite examples of unintended consequences, and some might occur there, is that thing with upgrade images, photos. Photos appeared, were downloaded first through some P2P network. Mm. So someone wanted to share music or download music, and had those images on a shared folder. Mm. So that's how those images have actually hit the internet audience. Basically, that's a legend.
Right. So it's an example of someone not going there purposely for those photos, but they're just kind of coming across them.
So those guys from record industry will share, will flood the network with junk, but they will share some of their folders, and who knows what we might find there. That's just one of possible unintended consequences. Anything is possible, and once they actually enter the play, it's going to be really interesting to see what's going on. So someone is posting an interesting comment.
That's funny. Kenyatta says that it's a funny thing is that many of the same companies that make the money on flooding the P2P nets, they also make money by doing studies of P2P usage and forwarding that information onto the labels. So that's kind of funny. There might be some.
One of those studies was, I don't know whether it's funded by recording industry, was there on Unmediated last week, and actually the study claims that 2/3 or 3/4 of the internet traffic in U.S. is P2P.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that's BS. Sean says that's bullshit. In fact, not in such colorful language, though. What about in terms of volume we're talking, in terms of file sizes?
In terms of volume, yeah.
I find that believable. I don't know. I find that believable.
It might be.
And in terms of my usage, it's probably 99%. But
everything legal.
Everything legal, of course.
Of course.
Of course.
Yeah. No. That's.
Speaking of which, if anyone has a Team America torrent, I'd love to see it because I'm leaving the country, so I won't be able to get it in Korea. I guess I could probably download the torrent once I go to Korea.
They said that it's. It's even higher in Korea. It's almost 100% P2P in Korea, which means which is also internal P2P. I mean, everything goes there through P2P. Even houses, like households.
Well, a lot there is also just someone sends a big media file directly to someone else.
Yeah.
What are you looking for?
Team America, World Police.
What's that?
Oh, it's from the creators of South Park. It's that new movie with these marionettes. It looks really, really funny. And anyway, it's coming out on the 15th, and I'm leaving on the 14th. So. I was hoping I can get it in time for the plane ride, but it might not happen.
So you're asking for illegal activity in some place?
Just for my research purposes, of course.
Preview. No, someone who might have bought it, one way or other, might share it with
sale,
a friend. It's a fair use.
Yeah. Sure.
So that's, that we are not promoting illegal.
Not at all. And I think... More power to these guys, exactly. That's the point I'm coming back to with these record industry people, is it is illegal, there's no question. So that gives you even more reason to fight. So go ahead, fight it. I think, I think content should be controlled in some manner. I think the record industry holds too much power right now, and this is some illegal technological activity that's forcing them to rein in their practices and change their practices a bit, which is a good market force. But there's no question there's some illegal, it's illegal.
Actually, it might be a good idea if people have examples of those broken or decoy files that record industry has submitted to P2P networks. We might want to collect those and make a show of that, or make a mix of those things.
That could be really interesting.
That could be really interesting. Interesting thing is, what is that they're gonna do?
Yeah,
they're gonna submit broken files or what?
Some of them are so purposely annoying though that
no one would want to listen to.
I guess so is some noise music.
That might be interesting. Negative Land might be actually interesting.
All right.
He's asking if any of us read the Wired Long Tail article last week.
Yes. Kenyatta asked if anyone read the Wired Long Tail article last week. I did not.
Yeah it's about stuff that is not popular, that all the stuff that is basically on P2P, on networks, especially in P2P networks, since the production cost and distribution cost is basically very low, almost zero, it's not that only popular stuff makes money. Everything makes money, even those things that are on tails, that are really like checked by very few people. But it turned out that whatever you put on P2P networks is downloaded by someone. There's going to be always someone to download that. And if you charge for that content, right, you make basically more money. The margin is bigger than on highly popular, very expensive production.
Interesting. And these are also products that are probably not going to find their way onto the shelves at a brick-and-mortar music
store.
Yes,
that's another thing. But basically, every single file that you put there is going to find the customer. So
even ours.
Even ours, yes. Yes, which we've seen on DV Guide. I mean, this is the thing. The show, last week's show, was downloaded 70 or 65 times, and it's a huge file. It's 180 megabytes. So we created a lot of traffic on P2P networks. Yeah, that's
have we held any rights to Unmediated? Is there any? Are we going by any copyright fair use? Yeah.
All right, let's be fair use.
I'm happy with
Creative Commons, you know, whatever you want.
So if you can sell this, oh no, but if you can sell this and make money off it, more power to you. Yeah, give us donations. You need the PayPal link up on the Unmediated Weekly Show.
We accept donations.
We have bandwidth costs.
Yeah, that's beer.
So let's see what else we got here. Let's do another. Let's see. Oh, search Google via SMS. I tried that a bunch of times over the last week or so. Just this, Google just released a service. I think it was late last week, something like that, or midweek last week, that allows you to send a text message to the numbers from the keypad of G-O-O-G-L with a search query. And then you get back as a text message results that are supposedly optimized for the mobile audience via SMS.
Is Dodgeball listening?
Sean's got a question. Is Dodgeball listening? I don't know.
I don't know. Question. It's 46645. Google.
I think it's one of the idea behind it is, I think, one of the best SMS applications that I've seen, and they're
really cool. Except that it does not work that well yet.
Yes, I've tried probably four times, and only one of those times did I get what I wanted. And that was, I was just looking for a phone number of a bar, and it worked for that. But I think they have some kinks to work out. But seriously, I mean, the way mobile phones are right now, it's very difficult to install an application. I'm running up against this with the startup that I'm working on, Socialite. We have to have something a little heavier at this point. This is J2ME. And you have to get people to install that. SMS is on most phones. You know, WAP is crappy, in my opinion. And it's not on a lot of phones, probably a quarter or less than that have the service. So it's a great way of, like, opening up Google to everyone. And if they... if they do it right, I think it could be great. And
it could be really great. I mean, the examples that work are ones listed there in that how-to that they posted. Like pizza, Lower East Side, that works fine. You get all the pizza places.
Oh, cool.
That works fine. But if you want to do something that is a little bit more complicated, like you do Gallery Soho, then you get galleries from New Jersey and stuff like that. So it's not descriptive enough. I mean, the thing that the queries that you send are pretty vague. So you get stuff that that does not actually.
And well, one
actually,
that didn't
Sean
work.
Sean is getting a message from.
Sean's answering his phone.
Yeah, Google is calling.
I sent out one message. I was trying to go to Parlay, which is a bar on Avenue A in the Lower East, in the East Village. And I sent out Parlay Bar, New York. Parlay Bar, New York.
Okay.
Nothing came back. Then I had to send out Parlay, New York, and then something came back. So I didn't even understand that, like, you know, even if that one was for some reason not on a page, it's probably because it's called a lounge and not a bar that it didn't come back.
But it's amazing.
If they work
thing.
Out the kinks, it could be.
And actually, the thing that we could actually try to tap in is that notion that you can make money by creating SMS messages. This is a huge source of revenue for events in Europe, especially in Netherlands. I know I've participated in a couple of events there. So one of the sources of basically funding for an event is open SMS traffic and a messaging system to audiences. Then you create lots of traffic. Then telephone companies, cell companies are willing to sponsor.
Was there some of that going on at Spectropolis?
Sean asked if there was any of that going on at Spectropolis.
I don't know. I'm not aware of that.
I think Dodgeball was doing something.
I don't know. But this might be an open call to cell providers to be receptive. I mean, one of the things that we might open here is like SMS, some kind of version of SMS chat room or posting messages here and asking questions, and then they might sponsor some of this.
I mean, Nato wants to know, what about the U.S. skipping SMS and going straight to IM on the phones?
Kenyatta asked about the U.S. skipping SMS and going straight to IM on the phones. They're similar applications. I mean, I think that SMS
is
lighter weight.
Everybody has SMS.
It's lighter weight, and it's universal. But there's an interesting thing. I think it was on... I think it's on the Treo 600. If you're sending SMS, it actually it presents it just like an IM chat as a conversation, just like back and forth. So I mean, it really exposes that. It really is just an issue of presentation, as far as I'm concerned, and an issue of with IM. It's sometimes more difficult to jump through some hoops.
Yeah, I don't have IM on my phone.
Like why do I have to have a separate IM ID from my phone number? My phone number has sort of become my universal identifier.
Yes. Yeah, phone number is okay. And this is the thing. And also, you have to have a little bit more sophisticated phone, a little bit more sophisticated service to get there. And sometimes those things...
The pricing structure is different because of that as well. So you could... I think in my case, if I'm on T-Mobile, I end up paying more... Well, I don't have the all-you-can-eat SMS right now, though I might get it, but I end up paying more if I use SMS.
I'm also T-Mobile.
I am.
Actually still, my phone, I still have OmniPoint. OmniPoint was the first GSM company here that was bought by VoiceStream. That was bought by T-Mobile.
Yeah.
I used to have a very advanced, sophisticated, like very, very, very now telephone when I got there. I had lots of problems. So since then, I decided to always be like two behind, and my phone works. So it's SMS works fine. I don't know about IM, and they probably want me to subscribe to that and charge some money, which, I don't know.
Speaking of wireless, I wanted to talk a bit about a story also from the 7th of October. Verizon to launch content service next year on paidcontent.org. And I'm wondering what people think about these, traditionally infrastructure companies. Verizon owns a lot of wired and wireless networks in the United States. Getting into content, and I think...
They said that they're not going to be producing content.
Right.
They're going to just
kind of
distribute.
Like a portal.
Mm-hmm. And it's obvious. I mean, assuming that they're going to go and install fiber, which they promised, Verizon promised that, and they're doing that somewhere in Texas or something.
Hmm.
So if they're going to do that here, why not distribute content? If they install 6 megabit line...
Right.
I'm going to subscribe right
then it's
away.
It's not very different from a cable company, really.
Yeah.
Just a different
way of
getting it. Basically,
that's the thing. And many cable companies do not produce content. So, it might be really interesting. And there's some business there, which also we might tap into that. I mean, if that's going to be substitute for cable networks.
What's the iMode in Japan? Is that sort of the same?
Yes. Yes, that's exactly it. There is that network there that is actually...
Sean asked about iMode in Japan and whether that's a similar model. I think it is. From what I know, it's a wireless model. I think Verizon's talking both wired and wireless. But iMode, as far as I know, and I could be wrong on this, and I'd love to learn more about it, but essentially... It's sort of a rubric under which content providers can provide their services, and both the content providers and iMode make money off of it.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, when you have the iMode, have an iMode service, it's kind of like a walled garden that you get content that's been filtered, it's been accepted by iMode, so there's there's theoretically some baseline level of quality, which more and more is what these guys are going to be. Verizon, you know, as well as Time Warner or Comcast or whoever, they're a filter for your media. And as media can come through more channels and can come to you in different ways, you have to find the filters that you trust to get the right media to you. I subscribe to Time Warner because there's a set of channels that I want through there.
The interesting thing is,
it saves you time to have a filter.
They're going to have to provide really stable bandwidth and sufficient bandwidth to be able to stream movies, to have you download movies, which opens so many possibilities for creative use. So you don't have to subscribe to their selection of movies, but you can actually start sending yours or do, like, you know, guerrilla networks. It might be really interesting. That's always that thing.
Yeah, the content could certainly push in the way of fattening the pipes.
Yeah. I would love to have 6 megabit. I mean, that would be really cool.
Oh yeah.
And then you could it should be symmetric.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once they install fiber,
should be. Yeah.
No, that I think in Texas or somewhere they have a pilot service somewhere.
But that's another interesting side to the story, though. If Verizon becomes a content provider, more of a content provider, don't they have incentive not to provide you with as much upstream bandwidth, because that would allow you to become a content provider just as much as Verizon is one?
That's true. But I think it's more complicated when on fiber for them to kind of have asymmetric channel than just
be a
leaving.
Tough argument. They could handicap it purposely if they wanted to, but...
Which they have history of doing.
Hmm.
They've used to do that with digital telephone lines. Mm-hmm. They had little digital to analog converters to kind of limit the bandwidth.
Wow. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's.
Well, I think one of the solutions is competition, though. And if competition were to open up even a little wider here in the States, I think it'll force upstream bandwidth to be higher.
Yeah, market.
Supposedly, that's what's happening in Korea. I've been doing all this research on what's going on.
Yeah.
And when they opened it up to competition.
That's what we are doing right now. Yeah. I mean, we are sending stuff. We are creating that upstream channel and demand for
we're having a bit of trouble. The DBA has more downstream than upstream, so we do have some trouble sometimes. Yeah. But
did you guys respond to any other comments?
No. The problem of oversubscribing. Well, yeah, I guess.
Oversubscribing.
I mean, what define oversubscribing?
Why don't providers give symmetric?
Oh, it's because they want to save money. I think there's a few reasons probably. Theoretically, if you know, to allow for all the applications that the internet can support, you should give people ample upstream bandwidth. But because internet over time has been billed as the next broadcast medium, especially by some of the big entertainment companies, they've installed more downstream than upstream bandwidth, and.
Well, these companies
they're having trouble thinking in new ways.
A television channel.
Sean is saying they think that the providers think of the network as a television channel, another television channel. I think more progressive thinkers see it as a paradigm shift, and I think there's no question that it's going to move in that direction as long as the little people retain some power.
They do asymmetric, but if that upstream is bigger than it is now you want on cable you get 400K, which is enough to send one stream.
400K? I don't get that much upstream.
Yeah, you get...
I get like 100K.
Or what?
130 on cable.
Oh,
I get 400 downstream. So... Time Warner?
Time Warner. Time Warner, as it is now, downstream is something like 3 megabit or something.
Hmm.
Upstream is something like 400K.
Oh,
that's,
wow.
Yeah, that's...
Maybe I'm not pushing it to the limit enough.
Yeah, you should call them. That's the thing. So you are Time Warner.
Yeah, the standard Time Warner Roadrunner package.
That's default package is 3 megabit down.
I gotta check that out. Yeah.
400 up, 380 up.
Hmm.
That's
cool. Cause I'm running an FTP server, and when I send stuff, it usually doesn't go above 100 up. megabits or bytes. Yeah, usually doesn't go over 100. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'll check it out, though.
Check it out.
Yeah, yeah. Could be my building, yeah. You never know.
Yeah, that's... Yeah,
you've had problems where your building was out for, like,
yeah,
I was
2 weeks out, and actually it turned out that they were installing something. They had lots of problems in New York, Time Warner had, and so the whole east side, like around 20th, was down for 2 weeks or something, which was tragic because they have a telephone there and stuff, Vonage and so on and so on. But it works after they fix it, and it works fine now. Yeah, but either way, if they go that, if telco providers go that way, it's going to be lots of bandwidth available for upstream.
Interesting comments by Kenyatta. First of all, he says they oversubscribed by putting more people on each local connection.
That's right.
than they had bandwidth for. Yeah, because the way cable works, which I believe is different from DSL, is we're sharing, I guess a set number of people are sharing a connection.
Yes.
So you lose it as you have.
Yeah, there is that rule that...
But there is the same problem with DSL in terms of upstream bandwidth.
Yeah, there is that rule with DSL 1 to 20, basically 1 to 20. They assume that, you know, one of 20 people is always going to be on, but not more than one. So they oversubscribe people by ratio 1 to 20 when there is wired connection. When there is a cable connection, there is no rule. There's so many things on cable which are weird. For example, if someone wants to listen to your cable traffic, there is no legal structure to prevent them. They don't need a warrant. I mean, if they want to tap into your wired traffic, they need to have a warrant, even without Patriot Act and stuff like that. So they need to have a warrant. Cable as built, it was built as a one-way medium, one-way channel. So there was never legal structure to prevent law enforcement to listen to that. Because it's like, what would they listen? So it's totally open. They can listen to traffic without any warrant.
Wow.
And it's still the case. And
so this encrypt is one your of the, traffic.
One if, of if the you, reasons, ideological stuff. Reasons why they push a little bit, why governments push a little bit more cable companies ahead. Like, because it's easier for them to monitor. It's cheaper. They don't need warrants and everything.
Interesting.
But if cable companies become telecommunication companies, if the FCC changes...
Yes, that's...
Right. Sean says, what if cable companies...
They refuse to give it that telecommunication flag.
Right, cable companies do not have a telecommunications status.
No.
Yeah.
No,
they're under a
basically, we use cable now for internet, which is two-way media. But they treat it as if just a broadcast medium towards you.
So Kenyatta says it's a 1 to 20 ratio?
1 to 20 when there is a wire. Mm-hmm. When there is cable, it's much, much, much worse.
So, let's see what else. This is kind of a fun thing. Avatar is anchoring your RSS evening news. I think it's fun right now, but there's some potential here, certainly.
That's not avatars, that's real people.
Sean wants naked avatars. not yet, Sean, we're starting. Just kidding. You're just confusing it with the naked news. Great show.
What's that?
I picked it up once or twice. There's some website. Do you know what the URL is, Sean?
I think it's naked news.
Nakednews.com or something like that. Do a Google search. But they do daily news in the nude, and I think that the women, women, I think it's, they might have men
as
well, I don't know, but they strip as they give the news.
I've seen it, but they never check, and they're really doing that.
Yeah, I think they're doing it every day. I mean, I just logged on some random day, and I saw that day's news. Nakednews.com, Sean confirms.
Oh, that's, I would love to see election coverage of that.
We'll have to get that stream at LA Location 1. anyway, this story is from what day? I think the 7th as well. Big news day for Unmediated. Thanks, Kenyatta. From Micropersuasion. And they're talking about virtual reality characters, avatars, that download the latest news feeds and then show them on the TV screen with funny characters actually speaking them out. And there's a different news character for each news category, world news, sports, technology, entertainment, etc. And is this, oh, it's a different emotion of a single penguin. and I think it's really fun right now, and we categorize that under strange. But what happens 10 years from now when, you know, every computer has the 3D graphics capability and the artificial intelligence capability to, you know, put a dead actor on the screen and have him
or
read
real
your
actors
news.
There is a thing, there is a project, and I hope it's going to be done for the election. There's a student at Columbia University. Last week I was there, gave a little lecture, and then after that I had a studio visit. And what she wants to do, she wants to have Bush, to generate Bush, read the Patriot Act. The whole thing. And she's using Via Voice and what else is she's using to generate speech.
There's a joke, I used to work at ABC, and there's a joke around there on the radio network side that the Disney Imagineers have been working on making a virtual Paul Harvey because he's their biggest thing.
You want to repeat that?
So Sean said that there is a joke at ABC that they would like to have a virtual Paul Harvey because he's the biggest guru, the ideology. Yeah,
that's funny. Yeah, I was listening to a...
There's rumors that he's already dead. It is a virtual Paul Harvey.
So what? There is a rumor that he's dead.
And that everything is reconstituted, like, from his past shows.
Oh, man.
Jon Stewart gave an interview I think it was Fresh Air, about a week ago or 2 weeks ago, where he was saying that in 20 years he's slated to replace Ted Koppel, and then he corrected himself. He said, no, actually, I'm slated to replace the robot Ted Koppel that is replacing the real Ted Koppel on Nightline. So, yeah, he's paying attention to this trend very, very closely.
No, that's a serious thing,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, because in the movies they're bigger budget, and... there's more time to produce them, and they're not live, so there's so much time. And now, obviously, they're full CG movies, and they're partial CG movies, like that.
Or you can
one of the biggest movies out right now.
Presidential debates with generated digital figures, actually, there.
Right.
And just, you know, avatars, and have PR teams just... direct and send messages, which might be happening already, but with the...
Yeah, and it's amazing because these technologies only made this thing possible in still media only like 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
When like National Geographic moved the pyramids on their cover in Photoshop, that was really, really big news. And now, being able to do this kind of stuff in video, it's an exponential difference, I think. People tend to look at video as real.
So we might do our next show sitting at home and making VR here.
But then someone will take our clothes off and we'll be naked doing the show or something. So,
well, I don't know. I don't know. It might be fun. Who knows how many people would watch.
That's one way to get ratings. Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, no. Someone is... What's this? Something is moving there.
Let's see, what else? Howard Stern, this week on Dan Gilmore's E-Journal. Howard Stern was broadcasting on Sirius Radio in 2006, and after all this, the FCC's quote-unquote congressionally mandated war on indecency, which has turned into a war on common sense and free speech. What does that mean when Howard Stern turns away from traditional airwaves and goes to satellite radio?
With such a budget. I mean, his budget is $100 million per year.
Wow. What does he use that for?
Salary, production.
Wow.
Yeah, that's. I don't know what he's going to do with $100 million per year, but it's amazing thing that it's actually he's going to satellite.
Yeah, it's kind of probably the biggest news in terms of talk on satellite of late. And with Howard Stern's popularity and with the his tenuous relationship with the FCC, it's showing that you know, now with the explosion of media options, there's some there's some viability in the satellite radio. Yeah.
Which again has an unintended consequence. He's still big, very popular in New York, for example. But when on satellite radio, no one is going to listen because satellite radio is listened in a car. So basically, very few people are going to listen to his show in New York. So his listeners base is going to move outside of a couple of big cities. He's going to stay in LA and so on, where people drive. Mm-hmm. But it's a different base, so he's going to have to have a different show.
That's true, yeah.
After a while, he's going to have a different show. So in a way, that censorship works. So he's going somewhere else, but his base is going to change, so he has to craft a different show. It's amazing, yeah.
So C. Regal says you can buy a satellite radio for the house.
Yeah, yeah, no, no, you can. I know that you can, but... Who's going to listen to satellite radio in the house? Maybe someone...
Well, right now it's probably a smaller market, but, you know, if you have compelling content, maybe they would. Also, there's a bunch of stories in the past week about radio and alternatives to radio. In fact, there's a story, make an iPod into a pirate radio station.
Yeah, iPodder.
Not iPodder.
Actually, I didn't read this story, so I don't know if any of you, either of you guys did, but I guess you can boost the signal of the iTrip Mini. The iTrip is a little transmitter that you plug on top of the iPod that broadcasts to your car radio. And it'll broadcast on any channel that you choose.
But now there's a hack
that allows you to boost the signal. So I guess you made a little bigger of a radio station.
Well, I haven't seen that post.
You should check out this post as we speak.
Because I have this little thing, and it really, as it is, does not work that well.
Yeah, especially in New York City.
Yeah, that's...
Because the radio waves are, so at least the FM, are pretty saturated.
That's interesting.
But if you leave New York City, it does... I mean, I have used it on a road trip, and it works pretty decently.
So C. Regal says, why hasn't Apple allowed the iPod to record voice memos at high quality?
I think there is a, like... an accessory that allows you to do that.
There is something to...
I believe there is.
Yes.
Made
it's
by
different gadget,
Belkin,
yes,
possibly.
Yes.
Let me see this. Pirate Radio. Let me check this out. But in the meantime, there was another very similar story also about Pirate Radio. Did I print that one out? I don't think I did, but giving out... Oh, yeah, the Walker Arts Center.
Oh, yeah.
Wants to put the public back in the public airwaves. It's distributing tiny radio transmitter kits so that people can broadcast from their own personal radio stations.
Yeah, they
are giving legal range of radio?
Yeah, the power is below that legal threshold, so you don't have to have a...
Which doesn't get you very far, right? It's like a few city blocks.
Yeah. No, even not that. It's just a couple hundred feet or something like that. But it's really cheap and it's really small. And I've seen people doing that, like assembling those pirate radio stations within 15 minutes. You can buy, you know, stuff at Radio Shack and make it yourself. It's amazing. It again goes back to FCC. FCC didn't allow low power radios to proliferate. So that would have been.
What happened?
I need the ability, Sean, to paste into this Java applet. So I've got a long URL that I want to paste in there, and I just can't do it. So I'm going to skip it. You guys go to Engadget to find that, or go to Unmediated and find the link to the pirate radio.
We've got a lot of discussion around using the iPod to record stuff. He's asking if you know of any hacks that will allow firmware hacks that will allow the iPod to record at higher quality.
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah. Any hackers out there, please check it out and let us know. We always accept and read our email. What's this weekly show? We'll give out the email address.
But don't send HTML email, because everybody has a filter. So if you send HTML email, it's not going to go through. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I'm gonna actually check this. I have a little gadget also that that you can record them. Yeah.
While we're sending out a call to hackers, I also want to set out, this is a bit personal, but I also want to send a call out. Any of our listeners who are in South Korea, in Seoul or outside Seoul, I'm going to be there next Thursday, and I'd love to hear of any advice, anything you think I should check out. I'm going to be at a conference called International Conference on Mobile Technology and Social Change, which is a week from today and a week from tomorrow, Monday and Tuesday of next week. Mellinger.net, dan@mellinger.net, and I'd love to hear from you. And if anyone's interested in grabbing a coffee or something, love that too. I'll be traveling around there and checking out the scene. So, what else? Oh, Amanda, iPod voice recorder, iTalk from Griffin Technologies. Thank you very much.
That's still the 8.
Low quality, but. So that's probably decent for voice, but not much else, right? Are there any products that take a mini cable in or anything like that? I mean, it shouldn't be that much
radio.
Of a hack. No, for an iPod.
For an iPod.
There's something on unmediated about, it's like a little board and it's got a hard, I don't know, it takes flash memory.
Okay. Well, anything that could use a FireWire hard drive also should theoretically be able to use the iPod as a hard drive. But then you'd need
like through a regular audio jack and connect to low power radio.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but this is somebody who wants to record.
We're talking about recording high quality directly to a hard drive. The place to look for something like that, my guess would be look at the taper community. Those guys who started out taping the Grateful Dead and are taping Ben taped Fish, and Fish is dead now. But there's tons of, the jam band community that tapes. I mean, they're always looking at the next latest gear, high-quality microphones. Originally they were recording to analog tapes, then they started recording to DAT tapes.
Yeah.
Then some started recording to CD, though, that's lower quality than DAT was. And I'm sure there are some people recording directly to hard drive right now. I mean, why wouldn't they be?
Yeah.
So anybody who... need to know Unmediated is doing a service today, so it might be down for a while.
Okay, it's on the chat, but Kina just said Unmediated is going to be doing a server switch today, so it might be down for a while later. And in fact, I think Kenyatta was supposed to be here today, and that's probably has something to do with why he's not there. Kenyatta works at iBeam, and I think they're having some sort of fire they need to put out today or something like that. I'm sure Kenyatta would be here if he could. Okay, cool.
Cool, so it's 3 o'clock. I think we can, huh?
Yeah, I think we can. I think it's time to wrap up.
Yeah, it was
but,
fun.
But yeah, it was fun, Drazen.
Okay.
Thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
We'll see you again. Well, I won't see you again next week, but I believe we have a show again next week. That's Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thanks for watching live. If you're not watching live this week, try to watch live next week, because we'd love to have you in our chat room interacting with us. But, of course, we'd also love to have you watching any way you can.
Also, download the clip is going to be on DV Guide, so you can download
the archive. I think, linked from this webpage.
This webpage or
unmediated.org.
Yeah, unmediated.org is going to carry a torrent for the...
Cool. So thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean, from behind the controls. And this is Unmediated Team signing off.
Okay,
so long.
Bye.
Come back next week. We're still live.
Come back next week.
All right, bye.
Bye.